Hello all, here we are once again for another episode of Audible Weed Walk. This is Nina bringing you the episode number 8. There are some loose patterns and or theme through these episodes. So if you are somebody who is tuning in just today, missed some episode in the past, feel inspired, catch them all at the Audible Radio site and also at the YouTube channel called Edible Weed Walk. Last week, I had posed some questions to you and told that we may address them in our subsequent session. The questions were regarding foraging. I had asked you, if you forage, ask yourself, why do you forage? Even before that, there is a question, what is foraging for you? This may lead to some important crossroads. So let's start. Discussing what is foraging. First, let's deal with the formal definition of foraging. Traditionally, foraging refers to plant material, mainly plants and leaves and stems eaten by grazing livestock. Historically, it meant that only plants eaten by the animals themselves, like when they are roaming around in the pastures or they are out and about, not in front of you. But eventually, it became like if you gather plants for the plant, for your animal, and offer that to that fodder to your animal, to your domesticated animal, it is also considered forage. But foraging, however, is simply not a verb form of those who forage. It is actually obtaining food or provision by searching. That's the formal definition. Foraging theory is a branch of behavioral ecology that studies foraging behavior of an animal in response to environment where the animal lives. It is a very crucial skill for an animal because if you imagine an animal's ability to forage the nutritious food, forage while not being eaten by some other animal, these are very essential skills for an animal to survive in the wild. And if they forage well and right, they grow strong and beautiful specimen of its own species, which attract excellent mates, so they actually able to create wonderful little animals, and these are all considered very essential acts in the wild. So the foraging, therefore, is a very key element in the wild. Now let's discuss what is generally meant when we use the word foraging in now, like in a human context. Forage food usually refers to food growing in the wild. They may be wild varieties or just plants that grows on its own without us tending. Sometimes we call it volunteers. You find that, tomatoes, for example, volunteers quite often. You didn't plant, but, you suddenly find that in your pot there is a tomato plant or some other plant. You have no clue that it was actually growing in your pot. So these are basically, even though you're not going out in the wild to find them, you find them. Or they find you around your surrounding, and they will also be foraged because you will be kind of searching, figuring out what they are, and eventually probably using them. For example, you have a but in keeping with the original definition of foraging for food and provision, and that is search and gathered, even shared food can be considered foraging in human context. For example, suppose you have a group, just like we have the Roots group in Auroville, where people connected and interested in exploring wild plants, weeds, and local food loosely form a group. You may have a bumper production of lemon, and you invite the group members to come and take what they need. Even though it is not gathering from the wild or what is growing in the wild, it involves no searching, but it involves them coming and gathering on their own. These two is referred to as foraging. Even though foraging primarily refers to food, I would say, what if we go out and bring home some beautiful flowers growing on its own from yard of from your own yard or maybe yard you are allowed to pick from, along with a beautiful branch of something, and you create a wonderful flower arrangement at in your home. Ikebana, Morimana, or may even use some vegetables and fruits that you have gathered and form a Morimona arrangement. By the way, this podcast, when it is posted in the Orville Radio, will carry a picture of this wild find arrangement. Have a look and you can be inspired. Anyway, you got my point. If you are collecting your gathering for the purpose that is in addition to food, that too can be considered foraging. As the definition said, provisions. In ancient India, one of the best furniture woods used to be often foraged. In fact, it is this, as the story goes, many of the blessed pieces of wood that actually from which the deities were carved out happened to be driftwood that the sculptor or the maker foraged and found. So just to give you another dimension of foraging, in the recent time, there are many unique jewelers who, like me, find shell craft to be very abrasive and unsustainable activity. Because, you know, it never actually, usually it never is from the beach collection. It usually involves going out in the ocean and collecting live shells and kind of destroying them for sometimes not so nice pieces. But anyway, so it is actually quite an abrasive activity. So many of the jewelers who used to be part of this shell craft and shell jewelry had, over the years, had moved to gathering drift glasses from the ocean, from the sea, even drift plastics, and use them, these pieces, into making wonderful jewelry out of them. That is another dimension of foraging. Though often we refer to foraging as foraging plants, in true sense, there is a wide variety of items one can forage. Mushroom foraging is perhaps the most popular, though mostly in the West, because in India, except in small pockets, it's not that a major activity. At least it hasn't become a mainstream as yet. But even in India, one of the most expensive and unfortunately most unsustainable practice is collection of Indian version of the moral mushroom or gucci. Here in Auroville too, soon after the rains, you'll find several edible mushrooms growing wild. And here is a huge word of caution. If I ask you to be extra careful about plant ID before eating, and then to be careful how it is to be eaten and when, do not even dream of eating wild mushroom if you are not more than 200% sure that they are edible. But coming back to what else is foraged, a few items like mushrooms, honey, bird's eggs, sad but yes, but you know, bird's eggs are collected in the wild, and then snails and mollusks. These are all, items that are considered to be a foraged item. Actually, when I thought about it, if you are foraging for non-plant species, when does the foraging stops and hunting begins? So that was my question. Like, you know, when do we stop calling it foraging altogether and say, oh, we have hunted mollusks? We don't usually use that word, you know. We gather mollusks, for example, if we gather. The pattern I see is that though I haven't read it in any definition anywhere, but the pattern is that we do not forage if something needs trapping, darting, shooting, it is not foraged. So as long as it is can be collected and gathered, it is foraging. And you know, if you are referring to the wild. To sum up, this is rather unintentionally long definition of foraging, is that foraging involves two key characteristics. One, you have to search and gather, or at least gather on your own. On your own is in big capital letters. Very important. Because in this activity that you are engaged in, It connects you to the soil. It connects you to the item you gather. It connects you to the nature. It's very important that it's more like you are doing it for that connection rather than for the items you've ultimately forage. You can hear this from many anglers. Anglers are basically fishermen who would go out, you know, in the weekends. It used to be more activity in the cities, but not more in Indian cities anymore. But in the villages, you still find people who would rather, you know, not be at home. And, you know, if they have some free time, they will go and take their equipment and go and fish. Often they don't fish anything. Often they actually are basically sitting there alone, who knows, meditating, thinking something else, or they may find a fish. But this action of them sitting in the wild, their action of trying to fish is what they cherish more than the fish they catch. Actually, fish they catch is often like for the sake of the family because they have been out for so long and, you know, it's kind of a prize they bring at home. So number two characteristic of foraging is that foraging comes to you free of money without exchange or barter. That is also a very important characteristic. In the earlier example that I have, that if you have a bumper crop of lemon, for example, and you give a bag full of that to your friend who comes to gather, and similarly, in return, your friend lets you go to her or his place and say, you know, they have some wonderful papaya trees and say, okay, you know, you can gather some. There is no money exchange there, but it is barter. It is not foraging. Similarly, say when you get a note, which we recently, some of us have got, that such and such farm in Oroville or wherever has lots of lauki, you know, calabash, that they cannot sell. So there's a bumper crop and do you need some? And you set up a system to measure, take and pay directly from the farm. That is also not foraging. Even though, you know, obviously there is a act of you going there, gathering it and bringing it, but it isn't an exchange of money. So last week I had asked a few questions about foraging. I had asked, if I used to forage in my hometown, for example, and now live far away from it, is it okay to order the foraged food online or ask a friend to bring a bit of the foraged food for the sake of nostalgia? Will that be still considered foraged food? What do you think? If you don't, I will give my answer, but if you don't agree with my opinion, you are free to write to me at edibleweedwalk@gmail.com. I don't think it's foraging. I don't think it's foraging because if this person goes back home and at home he or she goes out foraging or, you know, somebody at home went out foraging and they're eating that food, that's one thing. If his friend or her friend comes from, you know, hometown and brings something which the parents have sent or, you know, somebody has sent, which is also forage, that's also fine. But as soon as you are actually taking an action and making it a commercial activity where you are actually paying online or not, somebody to gather that without knowing who has collected the food. Maybe nobody even related to you. And you are making it a commercial. There is a, you know, of the characteristics we had mentioned, it is in the, you know, clear exchange of money. It is a commercial good. It's whether it's for nostalgia or not, it is not foraging anymore. Now, what if you are a tourist and you go to this remote place and you want to eat the local food? Local food involves local meat, egg, local mushroom, carefully, and what you think is sustainably gathered by the locals. You think it's sustainably gathered by locals. Or maybe the locals have told you they are sustainably gathered by them. Wild berries, for example. Is that foraging? And if the answer seemed to be obvious, isn't it? That it is not entirely foraging. But it is not that straightforward. Suppose you go there and forage food, you are, you know, in a homestay and you eat the food that they are eating, that's one thing. But it doesn't happen that way. What often happens is that the tourist who goes, they say they come with a, you know, preconceived notion about the lifestyle there. So they recommend a certain food. They say, oh, you know, I heard that such and such is edible here. So can you get it from me? As soon as you say, can you get it? It is the culture of the local and how it is, you know, how we are also raised, that if you have a guest, you want to cater to the guest. So the locals then go running and finding the food that the guest want. And probably they will be paying, you know, good money for it also. So all that makes it quite unsustainable. Now, there's a third characteristic when we discuss the two characteristics of foraging. One being that it has to be searched and gathered by you. The second being that it is without money. The third characteristic of foraging should be a foraging cannot be an uninformed act. So you cannot absolve your responsibility saying that, oh, you know, I don't know. The locals gave me. And if they were so rare and terrible to collect them, why did they give me? They know their plants and animals better. So it is their responsibility. They should not be offering me. I, as a tourist, hold no responsibility to go and ask because I have been just offered. I just happen to, you know, take it. If I am the buyer, they are also seller. They are equally responsible. That's not true. That's clearly not true because you, as a buyer, as a tourist, do drive the kind of tourism that the locals offer to you. I actually, you know, a couple of years back, I went to a foodie trip to Nagaland. And in one of these remote villages, we were staying in a homestay. And in the homestay, they were very courteously asking what we would eat. You know, the pet animal, like whether it will eat veg or non-veg. Northeast is non-vegetarian food, but they can offer whatever you want. And then they said, oh, but you know, you're asking about what you are recommending, what you're asking. They are our regular food. So they were very surprised that we were not asking irregular food. So our conversation went into like, you know, what do you mean? Like, you know, what people ask for. So they said, oh, you know, a lot of people ask for you know what. So we said, no, we don't know what. So it turns out that Northeastern India, a lot of cultures do eat dog and cat meat. So they were very surprised that we didn't ask for it. So then I asked, like, you know, who does? I mean, are there people who are not used to from their childhood to such meat? It will be, I think that will be difficult, like anything else. Like, you know, people who are not used to eating fish or meat from their childhood will find it difficult to accept it as a, you know, part of their food. So I, you know, naturally asked, like, you know, who comes here? Who is, are they part of the, you know, they are originally from Northeast. That's why they are coming to, you know, ask for a taste. They said, no. Most of the people who come, they are actually vegetarian in their own life. So except that when they go out, they feel that what they hold as their individual in a normal life don't hold anymore. This characteristic we have often seen, that people feel sort of liberated and, you know, they can put their hair down when they are away from their own surrounding. And that makes them act wonderfully in sometimes, but sometimes, you know, in its aberration, expresses in eating things which, you know, even the, you know, traditionally non-veg people will never touch. So that's something that you need to be very conscious. I mean, apart from, you know, these examples, there are lots of, it is important, even if it is not non-vegetarian food, even if it's a honey, that you know how it is collected, where from it is collected, and whether it is collected sustainably. Now, we had gone for a walk to see how the rock bee honey is collected. It is extremely dangerous for the people who collect it because there is almost no, equipment, the safety equipment when they actually are climbing this rock faces. And the bees that are smoked and collected, it is a destructive process. So it doesn't not like farmed honey where you can collect the honey, but yet the bees are kind of safe because you have taken the queen out. There is no such manipulations possible. Now, this is a very natural activity and would be wonderful if it remained a small scale, if it remained local. If you and I go there and we taste the rock bee honey sitting there, it is wonderful because, of course, it gives the local some economy. Some economic incentive, but it also gives them incentive to keep the forest because rock bee honey actually happens in a forest area. So there is an incentive to keep the forest as forest because you can then sell the rock bee honey to the tourists who are coming. Now, if as a memento you gather a couple of bottles of rock bee honey and bring home, I think that is also borderline, but that's also kind of okay because you have gone in that activity, you have gone to see how it is gathered, you have understood the whole process, and here with all the all the understanding and link that you have formed, that you bring some memento at home. But as soon as you seek the forest honey from the shelves of shelf of your grocery store in your hometown or wherever you are, that actually becomes then an aggressive process. So there are fine lines, and the fine lines is something that you need to work for yourself and nobody there to tell you. But never tell that it is somebody else's responsibility and you didn't know. As you know, in legal terms, ignorance is never an excuse. If you go and say that, oh, so-and-so, I have broken the law and I didn't know, it is never an excuse. Similarly, if you do not know and you have caused a damage, it is not an excuse. So it is, the responsibility is still yours. So not like in case of, for example, moral mushroom, Indian moral mushroom, which I had mentioned before, it becomes an aggressive activity because there's a whole industry built upon that, where the people who originally gathered moral mushroom for themselves and perhaps a little bit extra to sell in the market, they don't eat anymore. They don't eat the morals anymore. They becomes a laborer. They are becoming the gatherer who go and collect. So it's often that even the locals are not even involved. There are people from all over the place have come as collectors. So they are basically hired laborers who would go and collect these moral mushrooms to sell entirely to the market. So the demand of this item becomes so far and wide that the amount, because of how cherished it is, there's a lot of trampling on the ground. As you know, that if you have ever, gone wild mushroom collecting, it needs a certain loose soil. The mushrooms goes in little moist areas. So if you are actually a lot of people trampling on the ground and the moral is, growing in the ground, you are actually destroying the very ground that is providing that moral. So a lot of habitat for the morals in the similar way has got destroyed. But what happens? Instead of actually taking back and reflecting and stepping back, it has increased the price of the moral mushrooms in the market because it has become rare. And when it has become rare, and if it's an entirely market-driven economy, then there are more people who goes to collect it. So, it's a kind of a never-ending vicious circle where you are actually killing the items you love. And this is where a true sense, foraging in the true sense, is very important, because foraging is not the product. Foraging is the relation you build with the nature. So as a consumer, that's a very important role, even if you are far away from the items that has been foraged. So when you get your next bottle of honey, or even Himalayan pink salt, or even moral mushroom, which I, to my knowledge, I don't think anywhere in the world morels are farmed, so they're always in the wild. Think about it. What's your role in terms of its long-term sustainability? So even when you are gathering on your own, if you are not lazy like me, who would be by nature give up after gathering some, there are people who are really good at it. You know, gathering is like coloring book. It's an act of coloring. It's a meditative act. You can get into that and then kind of get into that mode where you're gathering more and more, not necessarily for yourself anymore. You know, you have gone beyond, but, you know, you just get into the mode, you know, there are five more fruits there I have to go and collect. So, watch out, you know, that's a kind of a little dangerous mode to be in. A couple of times, thankfully, they were dry fruits and not, you know, plants I plucked from the wild. I have caught myself gathering a bit much. And if that happens, I actually consciously, before leaving the place, taken out fruits I have gathered and strewn it back to the ground. This is important that you do it rather than somebody else tells you to do it. We need to gather what we need and probably a little less than what we need, because we need to be always sharing, not just with our fellow humans, but with those with wings, hoofs, paws, claws. And there are a whole range of microbes and fungi who are waiting the ground inside the soil for that. So we will touch upon ethical foraging. We have touched upon ethical foraging and conscious foraging already. And in the next weed walk, we will talk about a bit about how this act of weed walking, gathering and foraging weed, becomes a fractal activity. Now, what the heck am I talking about? Probably I'll tell you next time. But I will end this session with a funny story about foraging and about science related to foraging. I was in an university where there was a bear research. As part of the bear research, during the season, the bear comes to eat acorns. And there's somebody had figured out, the bear comes and eats acorn. They gather from, you know, they forage from the ground and eat acorns. And somebody had figured out that, okay, how much of acorn actually is available for the bear to forage? To figure that out, what they have decided with a measured, container, they have put a funnel and placed it under the tree in a kind of a bucket. And there is a funnel in the bucket that in that area, if that much of acorn is falling, they will measure that and figure out that in the larger area, how they will calculate how much total acorn is available to the bear and how much they are, you know, available for foraging for the bears. All that was great, except they forgot to factor in the intelligence of the bear. So what they did is that they have set this traps up. And of course, it's a bear country, so they set it up, and only in another couple of weeks they would go to check it up. And they went there, they found a lots of acorn all over the place, but there are none in the bucket. Actually, very few in the bucket. So then they wondered, what the heck is happening? Because there's something wrong with the funnel. They figured out that eventually that the bear are so intelligent. So they figured out that somebody has put this bucket there and acorns are gathering there. They don't have to go and collect and forage. So they started eating first from the bucket and then from the trees around. So with that story, I will end today and we'll see you in the next Audible Weed Walk.